July 23rd, 2003. We're at Port Lions, and this is Gordon Puller interviewing Betty Nelson and Abner Nelson. Abner, could we start with having you tell us a bit about yourself, where and when you were born, and who your family was?
Oh, that I forgot. December.
December 2nd.
What?
And who were your parents?
Alfred and Irene Nelson.
And your mother's maiden name?
Irene.
What was her maiden name?
Patellan, that's right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Could you share some of your earliest memories of a Afognak?
Well, yeah, men liked it there too. We always strolled around in the evenings, you know, where the town was about, like, 2 miles long. Yeah. It was enjoyable there. Especially moonlight nights. You'd play on the beach, there was nice sand there. What kind of sand was that? It was powdery right under Sheely's store.
White kind of sand.
Yeah.
Sand, I guess.
Fun, yeah.
How about your earliest memories?
Well, I don't know. I just had to go to church all the time.
Tell about your young days up at Litnick. Up at Litnick, up at the camp and the
When I was growing up, before we went to school, I started school there. I was just about 4 years old. And my dad was a fish culture, I think. He worked, and I used to go out with him, you know.
At the hatchery?
Yeah, work at the fish hatchery there. And I think Vicky gave some of those pictures to that I had.
To the museum, maybe?
I think they're in Kodiak somewhere. I'm not sure. And I'm lost.
you lived up there in the summertime?
Oh, yes, yeah. And that's later after we grew up, you know, to go to school. Well, we had school over there too, but like I said, I got tired of it. Here away for a while. Well, they finally found me. I had to give up. It was getting cold. Yeah, and I got a little tapping on the seat.
So did you go to school in the village also? Or just?
Yeah, and then later on, after I got in age, yes, the fog neck, yeah. Then we would, summertime we'd be up the lake there, Litnick Lake, and then the fall we'd go back to Kodiak, go to school. Afognak.
So what do you remember about the school in Afognak?
Well, it was good, you know. And then later on, to build a new school, I think I put in two years in there. That's the one that's over in Allertown. That's what they called Allertown.
Where did you live in the village? And which side of the village?
What do they call it?
right next, in Derevna,
Derevna.
Right, Derevna. Yeah. Right next door to the church, Russian church.
Mm-hmm.
So that was almost in the middle. We've heard about Father Patel and a lot. He must have been a relative of yours.
Yes, he was, yeah.
Grandpa.
Mm-hmm. Grandpa, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, not surprising that she spent a lot of time in church.
Well, that was it.
Did you have brothers and sisters?
Oh, yes. There's quite a few. I need your help. How many sisters did I have?
Yeah, there was Jessie, Irene, Lisa. Three sisters. Two little sisters died in infancy. I think one was maybe 2 years old, and one was an infant.
Mm-hmm.
And then he had, that was five girls. And then there was Johnny, Peter, Abner, Alfred, Willis, and Edwin. Six boys.
Mm. What do you remember about how the village was laid out? You mentioned Aleut Town and Derevnia,
mm-hmm.
and I've heard other people say that the center part was kind of like a separate section as well.
Yeah, at that time, when we first moved in, yeah. Sometimes we'd have a little war with the other end, you know.
Mm.
They would come and want to fight. And many times, the school was here, you know, further. So I had to go with them. They were going to school, but they were bad when... Well, anyway, I was a fast runner. I got away from them. So when they got out of the door from the school, I was on my way. But some of the other guys would get caught. That'd be a big crowd of them. But finally, our side got together and worked them over, the bigger boys, you know. And so they quit doing that. They got friendly.
So do you think there was tension amongst adults as well?
No, the adults were good. Just the younger ones, you know, yeah. I know this one guy was always after me. His name was Stoic Tishwak. Well, he was smaller than I was. And his friends would say, Sigum. And one time I got him good. My brother Johnny just landed under the house where we stayed. But they didn't notice that he they thought he went up, but he didn't. He was still on the beach, and I knew it. So I let him have it, and then I started running, and Johnny just looked up, and they separated like that. So. And that kid, he was a friend of mine after that. He didn't listen to what they were saying, you know. They got along pretty good. Well, I was sort of new, like, you know, every fog would just come in there, to Fognak, and go to school there.
Which language did you speak growing up?
Well, a little Russian. Mm-hmm. I used to go when I went to school. One time I got to I shouldn't tell you.
Oh. go ahead. It's not that bad. It's a story.
Anyway.
I mean, everybody experienced that.
Well, I'll answer it in Russian, and they got punished. The teacher, Sheely's daughter. She was a teacher at that time. She understood Russian and thought I was a smart aleck, I guess. No, I didn't know. It was about a pig. And I said, Svinya, that's in Russian. No? And nobody knew. Well, as soon as I said Svinya, swine, yeah. Well,
she was looking for the plural.
Yeah.
Plural.
Yeah. I remember that.
So there were strong requirements that you only speak English?
Yeah, right, yeah. Yeah.
So was Russian your first language?
Right, uh-huh. Well, that's all they talked, you know. And when they wanted something, they would call you. My name was Sashka. Russian name.
Good name.
So do you remember first going to school and having to switch over? Or could you already speak English before you went to school?
Very little. Yeah. I'm just learning. Yeah.
That must have been very difficult to be starting in school and then have to learn another language at the same time.
Yeah. Well, a little bit, you know, but it wasn't much. It'd be puzzled once in a while. Yeah.
Well, we know about your grandfather being a priest. What else can you tell us about the church and who was he the priest when you were a child?
I was just a youngster, yeah. I said the only thing I remember of him was when he died. We were sent to Kodiak, you know, and I walked past him when he was in his coffin. That I remember him by.
Who were the? Who was the next priest then?
I think Gerasim Schmaltz. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, we hear a lot about him.
Oh yeah, he was a lot of fun. He was good. Yeah.
Lada, do you have any memories or stories about him?
Well, yeah, it was one Easter. Yeah, we were out behaving, you know, and there was another kid in church. He had new galoshes, you know, and they were squeaky. Well, it was Easter night too. Everybody was sleepy and started what I think it started at 11, the church, and Well, anyway, there was another kid, me. Rudy Lawrenson was one of them, and me. We got the punishment. We didn't make noise. And they put us across the... he grabbed us, yeah, that's right, and took us to the girl's side. But as soon as he turned around, we walked out. But I went to church after that. I don't know if Rudy ever... I never noticed him going back to church. Well, that was insulting, you know. We didn't do nothing. We were on our knees just taking a break.
Well, I'm sure.
Yeah, Joe Frost, that will be good.
Oh, boy, they're going to hear all this.
Well, that's okay. You'll remember that. I remember that. Yeah. Otherwise, he was all right, so.
He was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I forgave him. I went back. I know he wouldn't let me quit anyway. She was religious.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember any difficult times or challenging times growing up there?
No, not really. No. Except the language, you know, change.
What are some of the most fun things you remember?
We had a lot of good games there. Well, some of them were Russian games. Well, we piled up with empty cans. We pretty long, and then we had like sawed off broom handles, you know, and we'd sling that forward to knock the cans down. And if you, there were both sides like that, had the same thing. So which one got all the cans down was the winner. And the one that didn't, so he had to take this guy on his back across to the other side to get him started, you know. And then you went back and took his side. So it was fun, though.
What was that game called?
Goretki. That's Goretki, yeah. That's the name of it. Mm. What else?
What about what about the dances and things like that?
Yeah, dances were a lot of fun there. I don't know if I did learn to dance. I was the one I didn't learn that to plunk on a guitar. And I loved it. I liked that.
It's a lot more than plunking. He used to play just like Chet Atkins, but still
not really.
Played the mean guitar.
So how did you learn? Did you teach yourself?
Well, by listening to records and playing.
You did teach yourself.
Yeah. I did start taking a course, but then I got in the service. When I got back, there was nothing. Everything was gone.
So when did you go in the service?
Well, the last, not this, the last one. The last one they had, what was it? What year was that? In the 40s, yeah. Got called in and spent 4.5 years in the service.
The army.
Yeah, but I had it made.
Where did you go?
Well, we were sent to Anchorage to train, and after that they needed help because there was not enough people to unload. Valdez, we were sent there too. So they could haul stuff to what's the higher place there?
Fairbanks.
Fairbanks, right. Mm-hmm. And I was a fisherman then. Lucky thing. They wanted two guys to run they gave us a cabin cruiser to live in, and then they had these other two, what do they call it? Well, you don't remember.
Yeah, okay.
They were just open, so you could help the freighter when it comes in, if it's blowing or anything, yeah. So we were lucky, you didn't have to do too much of that, too. Yeah, and... And after that, then we were sent to, they just got through with that Whittier, the tunnel that they were putting in there. So we were sent there, and the same kind of thing we had to do. Well, over there, I didn't have no break. Well, only work, you know. So it was all right. But it was fun.
So you spent your whole time in Valdez and Whittier?
No. Then, I ended up in...
Careful, to Texas.
Oh, yeah, Texas. Forgot the name of the place now. Camp Halsey. Yeah, Camp Halsey. That's where we took our last training. And then we were sent overseas. And we were lucky, too. We were maybe a little over, halfway over there when the war ended. So we just kept going there and stayed there for I think it was three.
Was that in the Pacific or?
No, we were sent to Japan. That's where we were heading. Uh-huh. So right after that bomb went off there or whatever, yeah. So when we did get there, it was pitiful. We didn't see nobody. They were very careful to come out. There was just a few came out and seen that we were all right. And then, you know, they were coming out of the hills. More directions. You know, they were smart. No! No, come on, cut it out. They were kind of smart. They build stuff, you know, just parts here and the other part there, and then that way if anything got blown up, well, they still have the other thing. They could still make that in a shorter time, you know. They were clever. Well, they were nice people there, except the military ones. They weren't. Yeah, they just kicked their own people, the older fellas, yeah. They were mean. I ended up in I was in the infantry first, I was in a lot of different land crease there. Yeah, I was up in the hill. They had that one, what they call it now. It was, used to spin. And whenever there was a plane, well, if it was one motor, it would vibrate one, you know, two, three, or four, or you know, be more. So then we'd stop it. And then we called the searchlight gang, and they were pretty fast. Mm. Yeah, in all directions, they would get this plane that was coming, you know. But then we would know that it isn't an enemy, but it was practice time, you know. Surprise. Just by the movement of the prop and what would show on there, and then when you work on this, the screen. That's right.
Communications, was it?
Yeah. Or, I was on that for a while too. Yeah, that's right.
You spent some time in Hawaii on your way to Japan.
Oh, yeah, we had to, that's right, yeah. Process over there and then paint under the vehicles because we went out on LSDs so they wouldn't rust too much, you know.
What was it like coming back to Afognak after the war?
Well, it was home. It was fun. Yeah. Yes, I'm great.
Do you remember the day you came back?
Well, I have it written down, but not really. So after 4 years, let's see, and then I was over at what do you call it now? Oh my! Well, I'm just wasting a lot of tape there.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Well, certainly the a very big event for Afognak was the tidal wave. Could you
tell
me about your experience in that?
Well, I built this house. I'm hoping there wouldn't be something like that that would happen. We had to move out of there also. Well, maybe she could tell you more about tidal wave. It was
just, what you remember.
Yeah.
You go ahead, tell what you remember.
Well, what were we doing here? It was, what was that?
It was Good Friday.
Oh, yes.
We were just finishing dinner.
Yeah. And all of a sudden, this earthquake started. And they got a little excited, just trying to get out, you know. And all of a sudden, boy, oh boy, I could hear the cracking, you know, the house is jumping around. So we had a fireplace, so, and in the kitchen that had the water heating, we didn't have no hot water, you know, hook up to
it.
And it was really gone, you know. It lasted for a while, so I put the fireplace out. There's that water in the kettle, and I turned the oil stove off. I figured, well, it might catch fire. So then I went out, well, they were in the front part, and I got out where the Jeep was. So she said, well, we better get ready and we have to leave the place. So I went and I took my chainsaw. I figured a tree fell over the road that was going up to where the sawmill used to be. They had a road going up the mountainside also. So how many? Yeah, we stayed there a couple of days. Well, the second day, we drove down, or did we?
I think it was the third day. I was too scared to go back.
Oh, yeah, okay. And I was glad I did take that chance that there was a big log there when we were going back home. Yeah, so I had to saw that and rolled it off with a bunch of us there. So I took the lead. I had a Jeep, one of these four-wheel drive. I had a, what do you call them now? Yeah, I'm just...
Louis Jeep? It was a kind of a van.
Hooded, yeah. That's right, van, yeah.
Anything you would like to add, Betty, about the story of the earthquake?
Yeah, well, just like Abner said, it was, you know, the house began shaking. We used to have little tremors once in a while, and they weren't that bad, so we just didn't pay too much attention. But when it just started, the ground started rolling. And remember, you tried to jump off the porch.
The Jeep was just dancing right at me like a fool. I jumped down and almost flew over. Good thing I was young. Still quick on my feet.
Yeah. And we were just finished eating, and the kids were going to go to a movie. It was Good Friday, you know, and you probably heard this over and over again. And they were showing the King of Kings story of Jesus. And so Abner Jr., the girls hadn't started off yet, but Abner Jr. was started off, and he wasn't home. And so I just, and Gloria was in high school in Canada, and the ground was just rolling, and the trees were swishing back and forth, and the ocean was just coming in and going out.
And all the kelp, you could just see it rolling out, and rocks that you've never seen before. Yeah. And just almost all the way to the other side. Mm-hmm. What's that other place there? Park, you know.
Whale Island.
All right.
And so I had read in the Reader's Digest a few months before that in the Hawaiian Islands, sometimes there would be an earthquake somewhere in the, you know, a lot in another part of the world, and it would cause a tidal wave, and they wouldn't know it. They would just see the tide coming in and going out, and they would see all these beautiful shells, you know, that they love, and they'd go down to pick the shells off the beach, and the wave would just come in. You know, because they didn't feel any quake or anything. So I told Abner, I think we'd better head for higher ground because I think there's going to be a tidal wave. Then his brother Alfred was listening to the shortwave, and he called down to us. He said, we'd better get out of here because the... So then I was just kind of frantically saying, what shall we do, you know, the kids all the, and we, in the springtime, you kind of, we would order groceries in the fall, you know, for all winter, and in the spring, you kind of always kind of got a little bit low on groceries, you know, so we had, it was, since it was Easter coming up, we had caliche and canned fish, you know, still. So we threw those things in the Jeep and started up the hill, up toward Back Bay, where Dell Valley had his sawmill.
And picking up
whoever. Yeah, we picked up, you know, whoever was on the way, and I was too afraid to let Abner drive. I thought he would drive too slow, so I jumped in the driver's seat and put the...
We had to cross the bridge.
Yeah.
And that washed away later.
Yes, as we were going over the bridge, you could see all this debris
coming in
on this little river, you know. And when we passed, when we got over the bridge, you could see tide still coming in. And when we just tried to get out of there as fast as we could. So then we did. But back to the yard again. I was just, you know, the two girls. We were just walking back and forth, and it seemed like you had to step over these waves in the ground. It was just something out of, you know, another world, it seemed like. And you could just hear the rumbling underneath, like a freight train going underneath your feet. And so we got in the Jeep and we drove up to the mill, and on the way up there you could see the water. How was that? It was.
Oh, you mean in the pass in the Back Bay there? Yeah, there was more water than it. There was no water hardly in the.
Yeah, in the bay. It was very.
And we had time to get around that and get to the sawmill there.
Yeah. So then.
It was just rushing, yeah.
Yeah. And then the boats that were in Back Bay and Dal Valley's boat. Or somebody had a boat back there, the wave just rolled it over you know, any boat that was out there, just rolled them over, mast and all, and just total ruin, total loss. So we stayed up there for a few days, a couple days, I think 3 days, yeah, we stayed up there at the sawmill. And then when we went back home, all the familiar sights, you know, the houses and the roads and everything, it was just gone. And it seemed like you were in another world. It was eerie. The tide, and then the tide started coming in, and it came way up to where it had never peaked before. So we just didn't know what was going on, you know. And other places were washed out, and then the Red Cross came in, and the Coast Guard came, and they took people that wanted to leave there, you know, whoever wanted to leave.
Their houses aren't gone.
Yeah, and that's where Liz, you know, that's when they must have taken them. And they took some people to Texas, back to their homes, some teachers that were there, you know, and they took some to Seattle, some to Anchorage. And but we stayed because our house was not that damaged. And we offered other people to come and, you know, stay, but whoever stayed was because their house was still livable. So we stayed there that happened in March, and then most of the village moved over here in December, or, you know, the first part of December, or the last part of November, the first part of December. And then at last we moved over, because this house was, these houses were built. This one was the last one of the last ones to be built.
We just added this one.
Yeah, we added.
And then the other end.
Yeah, we've been adding on all the time.
So what's the added the other way now?
And Abner is such a good husband. He says, oh, well, okay. At first he says, oh, I think we've got enough of this. But then he... anyway. So then we came over here, and we tried to get word to Gloria, who was in Canada, and she had heard that the whole island sunk. And she was frantic. For 3 days she could not, she didn't hear a thing, you know, so she thought we were all gone. And so finally we got through to her through the Red Cross. And then the Lions Club and the BIA came in and helped build, you know. And Mennonite Disaster Service came in. They don't go to war, so they help out, you know, in disasters. And they came in and helped build. So there was all these, and the Lions Club, the BIA did some of the buildings, and then the Lions Club reimbursed them. And so, in thankfulness to the Lions Club, that's how Port Lions, you know, became Port Lions. And next year it'll be 40 years since we...
Now I'm going to check the dog.
Honey.
See what's... Oh. The tank.
But Fognac was... I remember growing up there. We moved there. We lived out... First we lived on the island. I grew up... I was born in Seattle, but my parents brought me up here when I was 6 months old. And so I consider, you know. then we lived on the island until in the late 30s our house burned down over there. My dad had nets up in the attic, and they were had the, you know, soaked in the tarry stuff, whatever it is that they put nets in, and on a really hot day, I guess they just combusted up there and just started a fire. So then we moved to Yuzinki for a year and went to school over there. And then when the war was just right, after they bombed Pearl Harbor, and the Japanese were in the Aleutians, you know, Harry Howe had a sawmill up in Chadwick, and my dad had cooked on boats, you know, from an early age, and so he found work over there. There was no work in Yuzinki, you know, except fishing. So he went to work up there, and then they were building the Navy camp over here, and they were building Danger Bay and Letnik, the Back Bay part, you know. They had army camps all over there. And so Harry Howe was making lumber, so and selling it to the military, and so my dad went to work there. And we grew up there for a while. I mean, we stayed there for about 3-4 years. And then in 1944, we moved to Afognak. And while we were there in Raspberry, we lived on Owanigan. I don't know, the Southeastern people and what we think of a Wanigan is two different things, I think. But anyway, it was a house on a big raft. It was. I have no real bad memories of my childhood. It was kind of like Tom Sawyer, Huck Finn. We swam. When the tide was in, we swam, and when the tide was out, we ran the flats and fished in the creek, and, you know, and my dad and mother let us, as long as we had our chores done and everything, you know, we could go out in the skiff, and so we spent a lot of time on the water and just, you know, having fun up and down the Strait, Raspberry Strait. Then we moved to Afognak in 1944, just a little before, about a year before the war ended. And and that was a fun time. There were dances and parties. And, you know, we didn't have TV, no movies, no nothing like that back there. So we made games, and we made fun times. And I remember growing up, the over there, the dances were so much fun because there was all live music. There was, you know, everybody played the guitar and accordion. There were guitars and accordions and banjos and mandolins and ukuleles, and I don't remember anyone playing the fiddle, but Peter used to play the fiddle.
Yeah, fiddle. Guy Larson did.
Yeah, yeah, before we moved there.
Yeah.
And so, and then during the Easter holidays, or during the Lent, you know, there was nothing. You wouldn't do anything, no dancing or anything. But then on Easter, the men would all get together, those that played music, and there was Chichinov's house, and there was kind of a big spot of kind of lawn there, you know. And we didn't have lawns, but, you know, as we do today, but the cows, we had cows, cattle there, and they would go from one end of the village to the other, and it was just clover, you know. It was just so beautiful. It was just like somebody took a big lawn mower and mowed the whole village. And so they would get their instruments all out there. I have a picture I'll show you later of these guys, some of their suits and ties. I remember Ted Sheratine, he used to always dress up in his white shirt and tie. It
must have been Easter.
Yeah.
Holiday. Yeah.
So there were dances, and any time there was an occasion, any excuse for a party, we had a party. And the people would, everybody visited in back in those days. And there was a lot of competition to see who could bake the best, you know, cake and make the best tarts. And his mother was a wonderful baker. One thing I wanted to say too is we didn't grow up with prejudice. We didn't know. We lived the next house on the Allutown side of the church. We were right in the middle too. And we didn't, in back then, we didn't have any trouble with, we were new kids on the block at first, and so they, you know, we went through this teasing and stuff, but it was never any really bad things to remember. So we got along with everybody. We didn't really know the difference, and our parents didn't teach, you know, we were supposed to be nice to everybody. And my dad, he being a professional cook, he always had his coffee pot on, and he made the best cinnamon rolls, you know, and so there was always people at our house having coffee and cinnamon rolls. And my parents were very sociable. They loved people. And Abner's parents were the same. They, and at his house, when we first started dating, there was always music. We grew up around music, you know. They all played music, and his mother was always baking, and his dad was a genius in everything. His youngest brother is kind of a self-made scientist, you know. He can fix anything, and his dad was like that too. They were friendly to everybody, and his mother was the Abner's mother was the health midwife. Yeah, she delivered practically everyone there in that time, you know, and she was very famous and good midwife. And
what's her name again?
Irene Nelson. Okay. Yeah, and she. When the baby was born, she didn't just deliver the baby and go home. She would stay when I know I had two of our kids at home, and she would make you stay in bed. Back then, they made you stay in bed for 10 days, you know. And she would come back every day. She would cook a meal. Jessica, Abner wasn't home. He was working at Port Bailey. And Grandma would come down there, and then my mother was out fishing with my dad. She would come down, she would cook, she would do the laundry, she would not let you do anything, you know. I tried to protest, Grandma, you're fine, you know. So
but you did later.
later on, when I was health aide, I used to think, oh, I wish I could have another baby now. They don't keep you in the hospital for 10 days anymore. 3 days and you're out, back to work.
Yeah.
But she was a wonderful mother-in-law, and his dad too. Their whole family were just really good to me.
And, was she an influence on you?
Yes,
becoming
she was.
A healthcare person?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes.
Could you talk about how you got into doing that?
Well, I always wanted to. I loved helping people. I still do. I saw a couple of movies that had nurses and, you know, that helped. And, of course, you know, it was all Hollywood and romance and all that. That went along the wayside after a while. But anyway, I thought this would be such a glamorous and thing to do. So I started, Abner's mother started, we just talk about things, and I learned a lot of things from her. And there was a lot of home remedies too. So when the nurses would come out, they wouldn't stay there long, you know. They would come out and they would do their health care, whatever, and then they would leave for 6 months. Sometimes they needed to follow up on immunizations and things like that, you know, or else other illnesses. And nobody wanted to do the job. And so I thought, well, I'll try, you know. So that's how I got started. And then I saw that, you know, you were going to, you needed to know a little more than just putting on a Band-Aid. So I enrolled in the Lincoln School of Nursing. It was a correspondence course. I still have the manual here somewhere. And so I did that through correspondence, and you know, I passed the course, and then that really gave me some encouragement. And of course, Abner was always an encouragement too, and he helped. He was when I had to go out, or later on in the years. At first, it was just immunizations and organizing the program when the doctors and the nurses would come in, you know. And they would come, and we had no clinic. We used the school, and there were no lodges, no place to stay. So I'd work with the doctors and the nurses during the day, and at the evening we'd have to entertain them, you know. And feed them and everything. So we did this for 15 years, you know. We didn't know that they had per diem or anything, and they didn't say anything. Mm-hmm. Some of them did, you know. I mean, they didn't even know what per diem meant, you know. What was this new word anyway? But anyway, so then in 1968, you know, then they started paying health aides. And so they started out with, I think that my first check was $140 or something like that. But I loved it. I didn't mind a bit. We liked visiting with people. And then to make somebody well, you know, help somebody get well was the really big reward to me. I felt, my, this was just great.
What year did you start doing that?
In 54.
Mm-hmm. So, did you just start doing it, or was this, were you hired?
There was a nurse.
There was a missionary nurse. Yeah. Her name was Mary Light, and she was a registered nurse. And so she ordered medicine. I didn't know, we didn't know, you know, what to do. No, they didn't hire anyone. They just wanted some volunteers. Mm-hmm. And so then, first Gladys Olson, Ole and all the Olson boys, you know, she took the health aid job, and then they moved to Kodiak, I think, and then somebody else had to take it, you know, and nobody wanted it, so I said, I'll take it. And I started out with doing immunizations. Back in those days, everything, you know, at first, you just, it was penicillin, got everybody, it's probably lovely, everybody's immune to it nowadays. But I don't think that's part, I mean, that may be part of it, but anyway. So then I started doing deliveries. Abner's mother would go to town. I mean, remember one time she went to town, and one of the ladies went into labor. It was in the middle of the night, and one of the ladies came and they said, "Betty, so and so is really sick. Can you come over? I think it's appendicitis." So I put my penicillin in the in the bag and went down there. And I just before I got to the house, the grandmother came and met me and said, "So-and-so's in labor. She's going to have a baby." Oh, what do I do? You know, it's my first delivery. In fact, he's still around and he's doing fine. So then I began becoming more brave. So when I would have to go away, Abner would be chief cook and bottle washer and babysitter and all that. So he did a lot of that for me. Then when we came over to Port Lyons, their Wakefield had their cannery over here too. They had a lot of college kids, you know, in the summertime. They would come up and work. So I just did everything, all the help. They'd work out of our home here. And the kid, these kids, they would be working for a few days and they would have muscle fatigue, you know, and their arms would swell up and they would be coming up here thinking they're dying. And somebody would be knocking at the front door and somebody at the back door. The telephone would be ringing and they'd have somebody already sitting at the kitchen table, you know. Some days were very hectic, but as I look back on it now, it was fun. So then we used to use the community hall. One time, the doctor was coming, and I asked the community chairman if he would have a room ready for us. They said, "Yes, we'll, don't worry about it, Betty, we'll take care of it." They kept tables, folded tables and chairs in this one room as storage. They used it. I looked in that room and I said, "Would you please clear out this room and have it ready, because they're coming in a couple days." And so I didn't check on it. I thought, oh, you know, these guys promised they'd do this. So I went down there and opened this door and almost fainted. Everything was still there, stacked to the ceiling. Mm-hmm. So we had to find, you know, and then there were things like that going on. So I said, I went to the city council, "We need a clinic, we need a clinic." So then the city, a house became available. And so the city bought the house and turned it into a clinic. And what a blessing that was, to have everything organized and not have to work out of boxes and everything, you know. And Bruce, our youngest son, was just a baby then. And the doctors would be horrified when they'd ask, "Do you have these things locked up, Betty?" I said, "No, I have them, you know, put high so Bruce can't get into them," and he never touched anything anyway. And they'd be horrified. They'd say, "Oh, you have to get all these metal cabinets and everything and lock all these medicines up, you know." And so finally the city bought the clinic, a house for the clinic, and then things were easier then. Then I worked for few years after that, and I spent altogether 35 years doing that job. But I'm just amazed at all the other things I used to do. Sometimes, you know, I can hardly get my housework done in one day anymore. But back then I was on this board and that board and all this, oh my goodness, sometimes it was like alphabet soup, you know. He wore so many hats. But I know you all did the same thing too. Everybody did. But I really chuckle sometimes when I think about it now and wonder, how in the world did I do all that?
Abner, what do you remember about Port Lions getting established and when you first came over here?
Well, yeah. I was a water operator here. And, well, the way it happened, they said, you're living closer to the Cloneleer Shack. So, would you take over? Well, okay. I melted. I said, yeah, okay. So, I don't know, how many years did they put in on that?
Pretty 20 years of the whole thing.
Yeah, it was quite a while. Yeah, that's right, about 20 years. But summertime, I'd go fishing. And had a missionary here, what was his name?
Bob Crane.
Crane, yeah. So he'd take over, you know, summertime. But then we'd come home once in a while, you know, on Sundays. So I would check that out, too.
How were things, when they built the new houses, and how was it decided who was getting which house?
Oh, that's an interesting.
Oh, and you do. How did it happen?
Well, over at Afognak, we used to have to walk to church for, you know, a long ways. And then, you know, on the beach there with northeast wind coming in, sometimes it was a wet and miserable, you know, trek to church. And so our kids would, they prayed, Lord, give us a house close to the church. And so when they got over here, they didn't know what to do either. You know, how are we going to do this? So they put the lot numbers in a hat. All these lot numbers in a hat, and they went down alphabetically and had everybody pick out of the hat. And Abner said he, when he worked on this lot, he thought, oh, so pretty and everything. And so he picked they kept picking and picking out of the hat, and some didn't like it because they wanted
it went by alphabet.
Yeah.
N is a long ways.
Yeah, Abner was on needles and pins for a while there. Yeah. But anyway, some people didn't want to be up in the trees. They wanted to see the water, you know. And so they would trade with somebody else, you know. And so Abner finally picked out his lot number, and here it was, this here.
Yeah.
This lot.
The one.
So we said.
So they started clearing after that.
Yeah.
So there wasn't any thought at all of structuring Port Lions anything like a Afognak, where you had the Revenia and Aleut Town?
No.
No. You know, interesting little story about that when Abner and Pinky Larson and Mike Mullen, they were in the Army together, and they were down in Texas, and Abner said they were going to town from camp, and they got on the bus, and they didn't know anything about, never heard of segregation or anything.